Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here. Getaway Friday, November the 28th, 2025, 11/28/25. Last Friday in the month of November. The holiday season is underway. 17 minutes past the hour here, WGH Talk Time. Joined in studio by Bob Welch and legendary Major League Baseball umpire Larry Barnett. So glad to have him here today. And he will be signing a crust, as he will be one of the newest members of the Upper Crust Society here in Marion, and that is very well deserving. And he will be here through 11 a.m. this morning, and we're going to top the WGH Christmas tree at 11 a.m. Bob, this is going to be big.
It is big. I've already inspected the star. It has not been eaten by any of the rodents around here, so it's ready.
There are no rodents in this office, Bob. Well, I don't know where you get that. That was a past place we were at. I don't know what was going on there.
The previous star says otherwise.
Well, not in this office.
Not in this office.
Yeah, you're hung up on that. All right. Larry, here we are, the holiday season. Are you going to do anything different this year than in past holidays?
Try to live through it.
You want to make it through.
Yeah.
What do you want to do for the big birthday coming up in January?
We really don't do that. We just don't do much of that. My wife and I, this year, we've decided not to give each other anything for Christmas. We're going to give our children money. And I think she'll probably buy some gifts for our grandson. But no, we just, because if we want something, we go get it. I mean, we've been blessed to be able to do that.
What kind of grandfather are you?
My grandfather, they asked him at school, they said, what's your favorite thing that you have? He said, being Larry Barnett's grandson. So, right now we're looking, he's a junior down at Gahanna, and we're looking to get him a new truck, or I think he wants a truck for graduation, so That's what we're going to give him. I told my wife, she said, are you really going to buy that? I said, of course. I said, we have one grandchild. I said, if we had 10, they'd all be getting a Huffy bike. But that's what I want to do. And so he calls me Papa, and he calls my wife Gaga. Now, his dad's mom and dad, he calls Grandma and Grandpa. I don't know where those names come from, but they've stuck. Mm. He calls us every evening to see how we're doing.
Really?
Yeah, he does.
That's nice.
He really does. He's a bodybuilder, and he's nothing but muscle. I told him, I said, if you ever use steroids, you and Papa are done. He said, oh, Papa, that'll ruin your junk. That's what he told me. So he works out every day, and he wants to be a fireman and a paramedic down in Columbus. So, I hope he does.
So, sounds like a good grandfather.
Oh, he's a good grandson.
Good grandson.
He's a great grandson. Yeah.
What is it better to be a parent or a grandparent?
It's more fun to be a grandparent. No, not, I can't say that, because we have two great daughters. They were born on the same day, 4 years apart. September 22nd is their birthday. That's why I wore number 22 when I umpired. And Joe Morgan used to talk about that when I had a national game. He always mentioned Susan and Katie. And so that's their birthday, September 22nd. That's why their dad wears 22.
What do you think made you such a popular umpire in that people did know your name? People talked about you.
Well, I was around a long time. You know, I always told guys, I'd get a young guy to come into my crew, and if we're going to go into Boston, I'd say, now you'll be surprised when they announce my name. Sherm Fuller was the old announcer. I'm umpiring at third base. Larry Barnett, third base. And I mean, the people would boo and scream. Those kids would say, what the hell's going on? But that was part of the game.
So they stuck to that. They remember that, Boston.
They didn't. They never forgave me for nothing. They blamed me for throwing the tea in the harbor and losing to 75.
That far back. They've really got
it. Losing to 75 series.
They really got you there.
They won the World Series. And, you know, that is a great sports city. Think about that.
Yeah.
They had the Patriots. They had the Celtics. They had the Red Sox.
Yeah.
You're talking about a town that won. It's a great city. It just, I had one thing that happened that said, go up there someday. If you want to have a lot of fun, go in a bar and tell them you're me.
Really? They'll run you out of town. You'll be out of Boston before you know it. Prior to all that happening, what was your feeling toward Boston?
Well, I like Boston now.
Yeah. You like Boston now?
It's a great city. There are great people up there. I have a lot of friends up there. I really do believe it. I don't think they admit it, but no, I have a lot of friends in Brockton and things like that. But it's a great city.
What was the travel like?
Travel was the toughest part.
Yeah.
The best thing we had, I never flew on an airplane in my career that I wasn't in first class. Mm-hmm. That was guaranteed. That is the greatest feature we probably had. Every 3 or 4 days, we were on an airplane. And that's the toughest part.
What was the most enjoyable places that you visited?
Kansas City. I love Kansas City. I used to love to go to the old Detroit Park. Just a lot of places. Minneapolis was a beautiful city.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of great ones.
Now, we were talking during the break about your work with veterans. How did that all start?
A good friend of mine was a past national commander of the Disabled American Veterans in 1976, after the 75 series, said to me, would you like to visit some VA hospitals while you're traveling around the country doing your job? And I said to him, Jack, how much fun can that be? Well, I started doing that. 37 and a half years later, I'm one of only two people that's been in every VA in this country, and I made over 3,000 visits in that time. And I would go, like if I was in Boston, I'd go out to the VA, New York, there's 4 or 5 VAs there. You know, I would hit all the VAs when I was traveling. And in the winter, I would take 1 week a month and visit 5 hospitals that I didn't go to in the summer. Now, during President Reagan's first term, they nominated me for the Medal of Freedom, which is the highest honor you can receive in this country. And I did not get it, but Mother Teresa did. And I think the president made a good choice. And then during President George H.W. Bush, I got a point of light for my work with veterans. And we went to the White House and got that. And then I also received an honorary doctorate degree from Bowling Green State University. My mom and dad always felt I should have gone to college and made something of myself. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, so I was glad that I was, after they passed away, they knew I got a doctorate degree.
What was it like to go to the White House?
Well, it's impressive. Anytime. Yeah. I don't care what politics you are. You meet the President of the United States, that's an honor. Mm. That's the highest person in this land. And I treat them with respect. I don't go up there and say, hey, George, how you doing? Yeah. He's Mr. President.
Yeah.
I remember we were up there and my wife had a baseball. And she was talking to the First Lady, Barbara Bush, and she asked her to sign the baseball. And the president came over, and I said, Mr. President, would you please sign this baseball? It was a World Series ball. And he looked at it, he said, not with her name on it. He signed it, okay? So I had those two. And then when W came in, the DAV took that baseball to the White House of Barbara, or I mean Laura and George W. signed it. So I have all four of them on my baseball. I love that. I have President Carter in a ball. I have, you know what, I didn't run into Obama at any time, but Clinton I have on a baseball. And those are things you keep.
Yeah.
On one baseball, I have Edward G. Robinson, Bishop Desmond Tutu, and Tom Seaver.
That's an interesting threesome there.
That covers the gamut.
That covers them all right there.
Yeah.
You know, it's other than pictures, signing a baseball, there's something about signing a baseball. What is that?
I always took my time so you could read my signature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You hold that baseball right there and you sign it. And I sign it so you can read everything in my signature. Because a lot of times you see people, you know, President Trump now signs. I don't know what he's writing. Have you ever seen...
It's different. It's different.
Where he gets Donald J. Trump out, I don't... But that's him.
Yeah.
That's his signature. And a lot of people are like that. But I like the player where he'd sign his name that you could read it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just always took my time. And now we got a letter, I don't know, it's been 6 months ago, from some... I forget where it was from. It said, "Dear Mr. Barnett, I think you were the greatest umpire that ever you ever lived." I know, right then I knew he was lying. He said, "If you're still alive, would you please sign the enclosed index cards?" And my wife and I laughed, and I signed them, and then I sent them an autographed baseball card. "If you're still alive."
If you're still alive. Oh, my goodness. Well, that's a nice way to go in.
But we get about probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 of those a month still.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
They trade them. They'll send you 3 cards, and you sign them. Then they'll trade this one here and one there, and you get something else. You trade them around.
We talked about memorabilia earlier. What is your most important piece of memorabilia that you've kept?
My World Series rings.
Yeah.
Well, I only have 2 left. I gave one to my brother that passed, and he passed that on to his son. And then I gave one to my son-in-law, and I've got one left for my other son-in-law, and then I have the original one, the World Series in 75, and I've kept that, and Carson will get that when I'm gone.
It's to be umpiring in a World Series, is it more stressful? Is it?
Yeah. My wife wouldn't even be around me. She was, you know, the family entertained her, and she just left me alone. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't. You know, it's a lot of pressure. You don't want to make a fool of yourself in front of all the millions of people. And that's your biggest goal. There's always a little monkey running around out there on the field, and you don't want him to jump on your back.
Yeah.
And it's just pride in what you do. You, once the game starts, you know what you're doing, and you do your job.
What was preparation like?
Just, there's not a lot of talk, you know. And she could tell, if I'm in Cleveland doing the Indian games, I used to drive back and forth just to be home. I'd drive up to Cleveland. As soon as the game's over, I'd drive back, okay? And she could get up in the morning and say hello to me, and she'd know if I had the plate or third base or second base or first base. If I had the plate, she didn't bother me. I was prepping my mind for my job ahead.
Did you like umpiring for Ohio teams better?
Didn't matter where I was at.
Yeah.
You know, now that I'm retired, I'll root for Cleveland, Cincinnati. But I never did that when I was working. I didn't really care.
When you speak to kids, what advice do you give them?
Well, I haven't done that for a long time. I quit speaking because I used to go out and do a lot of public speaking. But I found myself, I'd forget stuff. And I think that comes with being older. And so I quit doing it because I didn't want to embarrass myself. Kids, follow your dreams. That's it. Don't let anyone tell you you can't do so. I came from a town of 1,000 people, and there's 2 major league umpires, a major league player, manager, and coach, the WNBA coach of the year, and the president of AAA baseball is all from Prospect, Ohio. So if you have a dream, that is a good place to dream, is Prospect, Ohio.
What do you account for that?
The water and the sciota.
That's where it all came from.
I don't know. I don't know. It's unbelievable. Buck Rogers was a player. He was a manager of the year in the big leagues, and he was a coach. He's got 45 years probably at the major league level. Jerry Lane just finished 34 years. He's retired. I had 31 years. And Brian Agler won how many national championships with the WNBA? And then Randy Mobley's been president of the International League since Harold Cooper left.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from one town, I guarantee you there isn't another town of that size in America that has that representation in sports, professional sports.
And there it is. And there it is. Bob, you would never expect that.
No. Well, the odds are against it, like he was saying.
But it's there.
It happens.
It's there, it's a great thing. It's a great thing. Just, you know, 20 minutes up the road here from Marion. You know, Larry, what part has Marion, Ohio, played in your life? Because obviously very close.
It's been very poor. I did a lot of stuff with the Gentel well, when it was Gentel, I did a lot of PR speaking for them in the wintertime. And I was very close with Bob Wopat and Tom Wind and all those people. They haven't named a Y after me yet, but they did Mr. Wopat. I think he gave more money. He was a great guy. And Tom Wynn was really, he was the director of public relations. Mm. So I did that for two or three years. Marion's meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
It's home. I was telling someone the other day, when our kids were small, we did all of our shopping in Marion, Ohio for Christmas. We went to that mall, and we went downtown, Sutton and Leitner's, the Toggery I bought most of my clothes at. And then Marion, you just did that. We didn't leave. We didn't go to Columbus. Mm. To do anything. So
when you were at the height of your popularity, what was the reaction when you would go around Marion or Prospect?
Well, they'll still do that now. I'll walk, someone will come and say, "Hi, Larry, how are you?" And I say, "Hey, good to see you. How are you doing?" They walk away. My wife says, "You have no idea who that is." And I said, "No, I don't." They still recognize it. And I have to be honest. That makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Oh, it was, you know, there goes Larry Barnett. Yeah. There goes Larry Barnett. Then I don't tell you what the rest of the thing I said. No, but it was a great place to live. Yeah.
Do you think that to do what you do, you have to have a big personality?
Well, I don't know. I never thought about that.
You know, because I would think
I could do my job.
You could do your job. You have to have confidence.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
I umpired as well as anyone ever did. I don't say I'm the best, but I earned every check that I ever got from baseball. I never shorted them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I worked at my job.
Mm. Now, Bob, we are going to have the crest signing here in the next 90 minutes. Now, tell people again, for people who might just be tuning in, how the Upper Crest Society came about and some of the members of it.
Again, you should have been listening to the first hour. I might forget by now.
I know, that was 90 minutes ago.
But it came about because we wanted to honor Scott with something unique that, you know, that the Tony Pacos was denying him. And so we created a pizza crust and had him sign it and made a plaque out of it. And it became tradition after that.
It did become tradition.
and so the following year, we extended it to Mary Ellen and Buckeye Guy and George Yasotis, and then Marianne Mobley.
Marianne Michaels. Not Marianne Mobley.
The wrong.
I think she was a Miss America, yeah, wasn't right. she, Marianne Mobley?
She was.
Yeah.
Can we get her in?
I don't know. Is she still around?
I don't know.
Well, we'll find her.
If she does, I want to be here.
That's right.
Then Jack Kellogg and Sheriff Bales and Brenda Donegan.
Brenda Donegan was last year. So it's a nice group of people to have around. That is for sure.
Very talented
and,
group.
Yeah, and this year, Larry Barnett and Bob Bender. So it's a lot of fun to have them both join the group that we have, which is great. Now what happens... you get a plaque. It's a very nice plaque. Yeah. I have one of these.
Yeah, and well, the start of it is, which we'll do today, is that we'll have Larry and Bob sign a pizza crust, photograph and everything, and then we'll take it back and make a plaque out of it and present it to them, December 11th?
December the 11th, yeah.
So everybody put that on your calendar there. It'll be the big fruitcake day. And so we'll have all the fruitcake parade, and Mr. Fruitcake will be here, and then the fruitcake toss and the night.
The fruitcake toss, which has become a big event here at WGH.
Are we having fruitcake fireworks as well?
I don't know about that. Oh. I'll tell you, Larry, this fruitcake toss is something else.
Okay. How far do you throw it?
Well, I'll tell you, we have had it. The rules are you stand in one place. This started about 6 years ago. You stand in one place, and you can't run, and you have to throw it underhanded. And it's an actual Claxton fruitcake that we throw every year. And this thing, the current record holder is the superintendent from the Marion City Schools. Last year, Brian Murphy won the competition. I believe he threw it 72 feet.
Now, I don't have to do this, do I?
You don't have to.
No, you don't have. We'd love to see it, Larry.
Don't embarrass. No. I got a bad arm.
I got a bad arm out there.
There have been some really bad throws, so you will not be, you know, in the grouping of the.
One thing I try never to do is embarrass myself in public. You know, and I've done that plenty of times.
You know, I'll tell you what's so interesting about it is that it's the one event that men can do, women can do, children can do, seniors can do, because there's not a whole lot to it. It's just a bulk. A little throw of it. And some people who you would think would be very, very good. Sheriff Matt Bales was the winner a couple years ago. But last year he was a little off for whatever reason. I think it's like baseball. Sometimes you get a good one off and sometimes you don't.
You know, and sometimes you make bets on throwing the ball in the dirt.
That's right. That's right. Now, do you like fruitcake, Larry?
No, I don't know. I don't think I'm allowed to eat that.
Well, you don't want to eat that, Larry. It's bad.
You
it's
have an
bad.
Incentive to even throw it harder then.
Yeah. Well, Larry, here's what I did. As I said last night, this whole Kurt Gowdy thing from 1975, I was researching this a little bit last night, and I want to take people back to how big a deal this was when this happened. There was an article in the New York Times. The New York Times, the paper of note. Now, this, I'm not going to read the whole article, but this is what was going on at that time. This is November the 11th, the New York Times, 1975. Larry Barnett says he holds two television sports announcers, Tony Kubek and Kurt Gowdy, accountable for the threats on his family over a controversial call he made in baseball's 1975 World Series. This was a quote. I hold Tony Kubek and Kurt Gowdy, National Broadcasting Company announcers, personally responsible for the threats to my family and the lives of my wife and daughter, 2-year-old Susan. Barnett, an American League umpire who is a winter resident of Prospect, Ohio, told a Marion newspaper recently. At least 95% of the mail I have received has mentioned the television announcers and their views, he said. After the threats were made, Barnett was put under protection of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, both at his hotel room and at the game. Barnett refused to call interference on the Cincinnati Reds' pinch hitter, Ed Armbruster, on a sacrifice bunt in the third game of the series. Armbruster and the Boston Red Sox catcher Carlton Fisk collided in the base path near home plate. Barnett said of Kubek and Gowdy, we threw them out of the dressing room in Boston. Did you remember doing that?
Yep.
Larry?
Yep.
Threw them out. Now, I want to get that story. I think they were very unfair to me. The rule book backs me 100%. They don't know the rules. Barnett said he received a letter from Dick Butler, the supervisor of AL umpires, who supported his decision. I thought you handled yourself very well through a trying time, Butler wrote. My fellow umpires in both leagues were simply fantastic. They did everything in their power to keep my mind off the threat, said the 30-year-old Barnett. Barnett also praised the Boston police for providing him security in Boston for the last two games of the series. Well, that's the New York Times, November the 12th, 1975. So, Larry, you threw Kurt Gowdy and Tony Kubek out of the locker room?
Yeah, we asked them to leave.
Yeah.
They weren't welcome.
So they came in there. Did they normally come back? Did the announcers normally come back?
No.
But that time they did.
Yeah, they did. They were going to try to get in. I don't know what they were trying to prove. Let me say this. Jimmy Evans had that very same play in Cleveland in September. Cleveland protested the game, and Mr. McPhail, who was president of the league at the time, disallowed that protest because of my ruling. And then I made the same call. The only thing that was bad, Bowie Kuhn came in the dressing room after game seven. He walked over to where I was sitting at my locker, and he said, Larry, you were 1,000% correct in the call that you made. Now, he didn't say that during the World Series, okay? Then a couple of days later, I read an article in a paper that Kuhn said, we're going to have to change the whole way the umpires are selected for the World Series. So they contacted me, and I said, well, if it had taken me 3 weeks to make my decision, we'd been in game four of the World Series tomorrow. So I don't think Kuhn liked that, but he never said anything about it. Mm. But he was wasted time, Bowie Kuhn was.
When Gowdy and Kubek came to the locker room, did they try to say anything?
No, because you don't get that far, because there's guards. There's always a guard at the umpire's room. You can't get in.
Well, the only other thing I wanted to read this morning, because I thought this was an interesting article, I had to print this. It's almost like the old microfilm. But I think it was in response to this article that was in the New York Times. This appeared in the Morning Record, November 13th, 1975. It would have been the day after. And the headline read, Gowdy Answers Umpire's Charges. Have you ever heard of this, Larry?
No.
No, this was Kurt Gowdy's response to this whole rigmarole. It said, longtime announcer Kurt Gowdy, calling them as he sees them, said Wednesday he was just taking a stand and didn't think his commentary contributed significantly to the death threats made against umpire Larry Barnett during the World Series. Gowdy said neither he nor his broadcasting partner Tony Kubek did any more to incite the fans than the newspaper men did. This is a quote from Kurt Gowdy. Fans could make up their own opinions about what happened by looking at TV, Gowdy said. As announcers, we're just supposed to take a stand just like any other media people. And then we go down, at least 95%, now this is from you, Larry, at least 95% of the mail I received has mentioned the television announcers and their views. I hold Tony Kubek and Kurt Gowdy personally responsible for the threats on my life and the lives of my wife and daughter. Gowdy said he was doing his job and Barnett was doing his, and the resulting threats were unfortunate. This is the other quote that Kurt Gowdy gave. He said, I feel badly about the ordeal for Larry Barnett and his family. That Larry Barnett and his family went through, Gowdy said. I can remember, especially in the seventh game, that the umpiring in probably the greatest of all World Series was terrific, and that people will talk about that for some years and the plays for years to come, both pro and con. And apparently Kubek was duck hunting, so they couldn't get a quote from him. But that was Kurt Gowdy's response. What do you make of that?
I kept my job and he didn't.
So there you go.
Now you know the rest of the story.
Now I know the rest of the story. So do you think he had to say that? His bit about the newspaper men caused just as much trouble as he did.
It all started at the booth, the TV booth. You know?
Mm-hmm.
They just followed like little dogs what they heard.
Did you ever listen to the tape?
No.
No.
What,
did anybody tell you what they said that was so bad? Or what he said that was so bad?
Well, I just knew he kept beating on me.
Do you, if you had run into Kurt Gowdy, what would you have said?
I don't know. Like I said, I was 30 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I was just starting my career, basically. I had done an All-Star game, a playoff, and that World Series was my 30th event. And I was only 30 years old. And that was my sixth year in the big leagues. So I must have been doing something right.
I would say.
You know.
And you know, Kurt Gowdy obviously, I think, was just trying to tamper down something.
Well, yeah. He, if you throw a load of crap into a room, you want to get the smell away.
That's right.
I probably was taking a little heat for doing that.
Now,
I mean, that was serious stuff to me. Susan was 2 years old. That's Carson's mother now. She don't remember that from a block punt, but Sharon does. My wife remembers that. And I remember my father-in-law, who was a farmer, when he went out in the field, he took a shotgun on his tractor with him.
They
were at their house. When that's where they would move them. They got them. The Columbus Dispatch came to Prospect, Ohio, and they couldn't get in the driveway. So they stood on top of the car and took a picture of our home and put it on the front page.
You know what?
I didn't cause that. Maybe Gowdy did. And Kubek was... Tony came to me and apologized. He was a gentleman. He said, I'm sorry.
So Tony Kubek did apologize.
Yes, he did. I saw him later at spring training.
You know what's odd about this? As I look at this now, reading these dates in the newspapers, I had not thought about this till just this moment. This month... It's 50 years that this happened.
Mm-hmm.
50 years later, reflecting back on this, what do you think?
It was the greatest World Series of all time. Four of the seven games went extra innings.
Now, Gowdy did say that.
Yeah. It was the greatest World Series of all time.
So thinking now back on that whole rigmarole, this big controversy, what do you think 50 years later about it?
It happened. Now that wouldn't happen today. because you'd have replay. I mean, we didn't have it then. I did what I had to do. Now, if an umpire had a situation like that, you would replay it. And that would take all the onus off the umpire. We didn't have that luxury.
For people who don't remember, I just want to go through this one. What happened, and how quick did you realize that there was a big to-do going on?
Okay, the armbruster, the pitch was up and in on him. He leaned back like that and bunted the ball. He broke for first base. Fisk gets the ball. Fisk fields the ball. Why he didn't touch armbruster, I don't know. Picked the ball up. If he makes a good throw to second base, there's nothing ever said. He threw the damn ball to center field. Now we got two runners on.
Now, that's the play. And what was the call that was so controversial? What did you call that upset
when an umpire,
people?
Or when a player and a catcher have a bump in fair territory, nothing should be called. It's a breakaway play. He's got as much right to run to first as he does to field the ball in that area. And that's exactly what happened. And like I say, Evans had the same play in September. Cleveland protested and McPhail ruled against it. And they sort of, I don't know, Butler was probably the only one that came out and helped me. I mean, Mr. McPhail, and he was a wonderful man, a wonderful baseball person, a wonderful executive. But he treated me like I had bubonic plague. I mean, I just didn't want to get around you. Just, they didn't want it to rub off on them, and I understand that. I guess I do. I really don't, but I'm going to say that. Because he was a good guy.
How soon after that did you realize that there was trouble?
Oh, it hit the fan immediately. Yeah, it just started. They just surrounded me with security. And how I got, I was the only person that the FBI has ever guarded. Dick Butler was good friends with Clarence Kelly, who was the director of the FBI, and got those agents with me. Mm. And that's how I got that security. And the Boston police were great.
So 50 years later, would you have done anything different?
I don't think so. I don't think so. But I wouldn't have had that chance.
Yeah.
50 years later, there would have been a replay of it. They would have ruled either I was right or wrong. You know, and it's, if you're a Cincinnati fan, you think I was right. If you're a Boston fan, you think I was wrong. That's our game, though. That's what we do. If you're out there to try to make everyone happy, probably not going to last too long.
And you stand behind the call.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
50 years. Does it seem like 50 years?
No, it really doesn't. And I'm glad you keep bringing all this stuff up because now I'm really ticked off.
Now he's going to punch me before the interview's over with.
No. I mean, it's good to talk about. It was funny, but it's funny now.
Knowing you were going to be here this morning, Larry, I was looking up these articles.
Well,
because
I'm glad you did that. That really helped me.
I wanted to go back and remember some of this.
Don't you know anything bad about it?
No, that's right. We'll bring out Bob's articles later on. But I just could not believe, just sitting here, it just dawned on me 50 years ago this month. What are the odds?
I don't know.
Did you think about it this month?
No,
did you think, my
really
goodness,
didn't.
50
no.
years ago?
No, I really didn't think about it.
Yeah.
Honest to God, I didn't.
That's funny. That is funny that it's happened 50 years ago. But maybe we'll get you to autograph this gouty piece
I'll do that.
You just autograph. We'll stick
Where's
this around
Sharpie?
The screen. Yeah, we'll get that during the break here, Larry.
Okay.
We got a call coming in. This is Larry, let me have you put the headphones on here.
Now, here's...
We got the celebrities here today for the tree topic.
This is a celebrity.
We got that. Larry, okay, stay with me, caller. We're getting Larry the headphones here. Okay, let me get the right thing turned up here. All right, Larry will have them on here momentarily. 50 years since that call back in 1975. All right, you're on with Larry Barnett. Go ahead.
Yeah, Larry, my name's Teddy Jones, but I've been around for quite a while, and I've been in Prospect a lot of times, and a lot of guys have been down there, and... I drank a few suds with you and stuff that I run around with.
I just assumed you didn't put that on the air that I drank a few suds because I don't drink anymore.
Well, I said you did.
Oh, okay.
I said, yeah, these guys, and I'm 84, so most of those guys, some of the big guys and stuff, been around to play ball and stuff. they're passed away also. So it's something to get into the 80 era, isn't it?
Yes, it is. He was just mentioning that the World Series that I had in 75, that was 50 years ago, and I was only 30 years old, so it adds up quick.
Yeah, and I was playing Little League when I was 11 years old, and I got acquainted, well, not really acquainted, but kind of mired Bob Feller.
Oh, Bob Feller was something else.
Yeah. When I was 11 years old playing for National City Bank here in Marion, and I still got it there in my trophy case there, or so-called memorabilia. And I always admired Bob Feller. Now, I have to relate Bob Feller playing and stuff because I lost track of that. Did you ever umpire when Bob Feller was playing, or was...
No, I'm not that old. No, Mr. Feller was before me. You know, I was talking to Joe DiMaggio. He was the hitting coach for the Oakland A's when I came up. And I said, what would you call Mr. Steinbrenner if you were playing today? He said, partner. He would have given him half the team.
Yeah. And you know what? I lost track of that time myself, Larry, because, golly, when I started thinking of it, I'd been out of school 66 years. Yeah. I graduated in 59, class of 59.
Yeah.
So I just lost track. But Bob Feller, I know that I was out there in Arizona. My buddy Larry Gruber, he lived out there. And I think the Rangers spring training, is that correct?
Well, the Rangers are out there now. They used to go to Florida. I was out in Arizona for spring training from 1970 to my last year.
Okay.
And I went to Arizona every year for spring training because all the bosses were in Florida, and I like to go out there. But yeah. We had a great time. We always lived over in Scottsdale, and we had a beautiful, beautiful team. We'd take the kids out of school for a couple of weeks, and they had to do their homework, and it was like a family thing with Sharon and the girls and I.
Yeah, the Rangers was out there. O'Hara was playing, and Willie, I knew Willie real well.
Mm-hmm.
Brother, the coach, he married a girl that lived right across the street from me growing up, so I related that name through baseball with those guys and stuff. But I just wanted to talk to you a few minutes and stuff.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad. You know Toby. Toby Harrow is an Elgin grad. Toby had about 40-some years in baseball.
Toby Harrow, he said that, he gets all the credit and everything, but he said, hell, he said, I could play just a better ball than Toby Harrow ever saw about playing.
Well, I'll let them fight about that.
Know, I was out there at the Rangers and sitting up there in the stand. I went and got me a cold beer, and this other guy was sitting there. I said, you want a cold beer? And he said, yeah, I'll take a cold beer. And I come back, and I said, where are you from? And he was from down around Alabama. And I said, my goodness, I'm from Ohio. And I said, but something about Bob Feller. He said, there he is right there. He said, you notice where Bob walks, his arm is out and kind of crooked like that. And I said, you know what? I never noticed that in players and stuff, pick up stuff like that. And he said, yeah. He said, that's from throwing the curveball. So the thing I wanted to get with you, being an umpire behind the plate also, what was some of the fantastic pitchers that was throwing a ball back then? And was they not throwing a ball 100 mile an hour like they do today, were they?
Well, it was the best guy I think I ever had was Catfish Hunter. He could throw a ball a quarter of an inch off the plate. If you called it a strike, the next one would be a half inch. And he would take you out and bring you in better than anyone I ever saw. Now, when you had Nolan Ryan, he'd scare you to death because you knew eventually you were going to get hit because someone's going to hit a foul ball into you. So
yeah.
We had some great pitchers, but Catfish was probably, Jim Catfish Hunter was probably one of the best I had. And I had a lot of great ones. It's hard to pick, you know, one person that was this or that because we saw so many guys that were Hall of Famers and they're Hall of Famers now, and they were great players and they were great people.
Well, you place high on my category of the name Larry Barnett, prospect, and I always used to go down there and go in. I entered the carp tournament all the time. Did you ever fish in the carp
tournament? No, I never fished and I never hunt because I don't know why. My wife says I was never a kid, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, too. When you went to school and stuff, what sports did you play in school?
I played baseball was my best sport. And if you ever saw me play, you know why I became an umpire.
Yeah.
I didn't have the God-given talent. But no, I played at Prospect. I played basketball and baseball. And then when I went over to Elgin, I played just baseball. But
Well, we graduated in 59, so that's the differential there. But the age, we're only 4 years apart.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Hey, it was my pleasure, and I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving.
Well, same to you, sir. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Hey, and I tell you, Larry, we're getting messages all over the place here this morning. This is from somebody who's listening online, Brenda Donegan. Sent us a message here. It said, ask Larry if he remembers our conversation in Dexter's parking lot about naming the new bridge in Prospect in honor of Cecil Ayler. I pursued it with Village Council and ODOT, and we got it done. Also, I was sitting in an airport in Chicago when Larry and Coach John Cooper walked by. Missed a connection, John Cooper. Larry asked if I wanted to get to Columbus, and of course I said yes. About an hour later, he came by and said, come on, we have a flight to Columbus. Guess it depends who you know.
Well, I was glad I was able to do that. She's a wonderful lady, and she was an icon and Prospect, and she did a lot of good stuff down there.
Good newspaper lady.
Yes.
And Cecil Ayler. I remember Cecil used to call into the radio station every morning and tell us how high the river had gone up in Prospect.
Well, when I was growing up, I pumped gas for Cecil. He paid me 50 cents an hour. He wasn't a big spender. But that's the job I had. And he always said there's always something to do at a station. So he either had me do it in the ladies' room or the men's room, keeping those clean. And I worked the windows. I had to wash those things in Prospect so many times. But Cease was a great guy.
I love going over there now because Cease has been going for a number of years now. But seeing the Cecil Ayler mm-hmm. Bridge,
yep.
Because I know there were many mornings that he was hanging off that bridge measuring the water.
Let me just give you a tip. I did that probably more than he did.
You did it. You went down there and did it.
They didn't name the bridge after me.
Well, see, you should have called in, Larry, and let us know what was going on. The Larry Barnett Bridge it would be today over there.
No, Cease was a good guy, but he used to have me. He said, you gotta go over and check the water. He showed me how to do it. He rolled the thing down.
He was a funny guy. And at one point, it used to be when I was at WMRN, he would call into the newsroom and give us the readings.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I said, Cease, I said, we're having entertaining phone calls back here. Why don't you just call me on the air and we would have little conversations there. I liked him. He was a fun man.
He was a good man.
And the Cecil Ayler Bridge is over in Prospect.
Very, very appropriately named.
Yeah, absolutely. Larry, I didn't know this. Now tell me if this is right. You were the youngest umpire in baseball?
I was the youngest umpires to go to the major leagues.
Isn't that something?
Jimmy Evans, Lee Wire, and myself were all 24. I went without ever having gone a day in AAA. I went out of AA to the major leagues at the age of 24.
And you have a plaque is it in West Virginia?
We have a museum down there.
A whole museum?
Well, it's the World War I museum, but we have a whole room with Kathy Mateo, the country western singer, Lou Burdett, and myself.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, in fact, the piano that she played at Nitro High School is in the museum.
Hey, a lot of people coming out of there, out of West Virginia. We've got Larry Barnett here for one more hour. He's going to autograph the Kurt Gowdy piece, and we are going to top the tree here in the next hour and signify the start of the holiday season. And also joining us, the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. So we're going to have a lot of fun here, Larry, coming up.
Yes.
It's
the amazing thing about that, the lady was the county treasurer, the state treasurer, and the United States treasurer. None of us is going to top that.
No. I don't know if anybody ever will.
No,
I don't know if anybody ever
will. That's a record for the ages.
That's a record for the ages. And we're going to have both of these legendary people, Larry Barnett and Mary Ellen Withrow, help us kick off the holiday season. Next hour, don't you dare go anywhere.
For the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams, singing the Christmas song.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung.